And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM. And we have a familiar guest with us today, and that's Kevin Nisch. Kevin, he's a retired marine engineer and a lifelong Victoria resident, but you may know him as someone who visited Hamilton. He is one of the survivors from the Freedom Flotilla, one of the few Canadians who was part of that last year. And he was also aboard the Mavi Marmara when it was attacked and boarded by Israeli commandos. So, Kevin, thanks again for returning to our program. It's nice to have you back.
Oh, nice. I'm sorry I'm not there in person. I enjoyed Hamilton very much.
Well, I enjoyed having you in person here as well. You came in very clear in the studio. It was nice to have you and Farouk Birni there. The radio lines and the long distance are always a bit weaker. But nonetheless, you're in the news again, and I hear that you are returning. You intend to be on the next Freedom Flotilla, and this time there's a Canadian boat. It seems to me overall that the next flotilla, the next gathering of boats, is going to be larger than the last time. Is that going to be the case?
Yes, it'll be over twice as large, I understand, or at least twice as large. Certainly 10 ships and up to, I think, 15, but the it's very secretive. I mean, like the ship, our ship, the Canadian boat, the Gazette, the Tahrir, T-A-H-R-I-R, .ca, if you want to check the website, I know very little about it. I don't know where it is. I know it'll hold about 40 Canadians and not much else. Because of the threat of sabotage, there's from the Israelis, everything is on a need-to-know basis only, and I don't need to know, I guess. So, but know that the boat's been purchased, it's sitting, it's been outfitted, all the safety gear's on board, it's been updated for handling all these delegates, and I'm sure they've got satellite communications all hooked up on it and whatnot. So,
you mentioned the name of the boat, Tahrir, and I imagine that's named after Tahrir Square, right?
That's exactly right.
So, I mean, that was happening in Egypt. It was part of what's being called the Arab Spring, and obviously it's inspired people here in Canada. Now, when that was happening, I guess we saw it on TV and on the radio and the newspapers. Were you watching that? I mean, what were you thinking when you saw this unfold?
Well, I mean, beyond me just watching it, one of our delegates was in the square at the time.
Oh.
Jace Tanner. He's a Jewish Canadian fellow from Vancouver, and he was with Code Pink, part of a convoy trying to get through Gaza to Gaza, overland, and it just happened that his plane landed, and he was able to walk right down to Tahrir Square and take photographs and meet with the people there. So we've got a very direct connection with the revolution in Egypt, and it's on board our ship.
Yeah, and Code Pink, they do very good work. I guess you met a lot of activists when you were on the last flotilla, and you had a bit of an international community you were with there, even in prison itself. You got to speak with people in Turkey or from Turkey, as well as a number of other countries. Now, did you get a sense from people you spoke with that something like the uprisings in Egypt or Tunisia might happen?
Not at the time. I was certainly impressed with the broad scope of people on board the ship from all nationalities. Before we got on the ship, because I was transferred from the Challenger 2, our ship was sabotaged. The Israelis brag about it. And I was transferred onto the Mavi Marmara on the high seas off of Cyprus. And when I stepped on board, I was told there was 34 nations represented on board, from Indonesia, Malaysia, all the way to Brazil, Ireland, and all the Arab countries. So it was, but as far as any feeling of the Arab Spring arising, I didn't get anything directly from them. There was a lot of language barriers going on, and I was only there for a couple of days, and then the Israelis hauled me away. But I certainly got along well with them. They, even though I'm a Marxist and I'm an atheist, the mainly Muslim people on board the ship, they welcomed me with open arms. They're quite enamored with me, so to speak, because they couldn't understand why a Canadian would travel halfway around the world to be with them to help the Palestinians. They had no concept that there would be Canadians that would be on their side, like yourself and me and many of your listeners, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's just the thing. Last time we spoke with you, I think it was 2010, and immediately afterwards I spoke with Sandra Roosh, one of the organizers with the Freedom Boat, and she had launched the fundraiser effort right there. I didn't know all the details, but she said, we're gonna have a Canadian boat, and oh, by the way, we're going to need $300,000. And I was... I was a bit stunned. I wasn't sure how they were going to do that. But we had fundraisers all over the country. In Hamilton, there was one, and you were present, and Farouk.
You had two of them in Hamilton or more. Yeah.
Yes, now that you mention it, yes, we had two. And I think through those fundraisers and the people in the community here, we raised more than $12,000.
At least.
Yeah. I mean,
I think you raised a lot more than that after the people used the PayPal on the Tahrir.ca website.
That's right. Just in the live in person, we raised $12,000, and then people were encouraged.
I think you outraised almost every city in the country. It was quite phenomenal and excellent support from Hamilton.
Oh, well, we had really good people, including yourself and Farouk and others, making presentations and explaining what we were doing and just sort of mobilizing people. We have excellent communities here in Hamilton. A lot of people got together to make this happen. There's a lot of excitement, and that's why you can see in Canada there's excitement. You can see why this boat is happening, and people in other countries can understand. I guess it's the Canadian people that might be more enthusiastic about this than our government.
Needless to say, I mean, we've had support. I mean, I've spoken... Myself, just alone, I've spoken 25 times or more, I calculate, and I've been everywhere from, you know, Yellowknife to Halifax, all through southern Ontario, Montreal, or, you know, Edmonton, Regina, all over the island, Vancouver, just up to Nelson and Grand Forks a while ago. There's been excellent support right across the country. And the Canada boat, the Gaza, the ship itself, the Tahrir, is going to have people right across the country on board. There's going to be right from one end to the other, and all trades and occupations and professors and common working stiffs and some journalists. Finally, this time, I understand the Quebec media has really taken on this project, and they've got, I believe, two different news groups that are going to be sending main media representatives on board the Tahrir. So
yeah, Quebec is sometimes in the lead here with their activism. It's not the first time they'd be ahead of us on an issue. And in terms of the media community or journalist, I guess they want to get on board this time, see what's happening, and there might be less room for dispute on what happens on these boats if we have more journalists.
Well, less room for dispute. I challenge anybody to dispute my photographs of the dead and wounded. I mean, and the film off the Matthew Mamara, the Yara Lee's film. You can see it at, you know, culturesofresistance.org. The photographs don't lie. It shows the bodies. You can hear the machine gun fire in the background. If anybody tries to tell you or me that, or anybody, that there was only paint guns on that ship is lying, because there was machine gun fire all over the place.
And with the boat and the experience you went through, it was difficult. Certainly the photographs and videos that you provided and others provided on the boat are very clear, and you showed those at the presentations. Now, what happened on the waters there, it was a difficult experience for you, and yet you're going again, and I don't know how you feel about that, if there's any sense of foreboding. Now, you are a retired maritime engineer. You know about ships and the operation of ships on the seas, I imagine. Do you plan to be able to help out if anything goes wrong?
Well, I tried to help out last time when our ship was, like I say, the Israelis bragged, they sabotaged it, and I attempted to help out, but with no tools and not knowing the equipment, every ship is different. I certainly isolated the problem, and the problem on that ship was on the bridge somewhere, but by the time I was getting close to sorting it out, we had sprung a leak because of the beating we had taken. Without steering, we really took a beating in a storm. They'll have lots of professionals on board the Matthew Mamara. I'm going to be sailing on the Matthew Mamara, not the Canadian boat, the Gaza. I was invited to go on the Matthew Mamara while I was still in prison in Israel, and I'm keeping my word, and they want me on it. So.
Well, yes, I think it's significant that you would be there. I think it means a lot, and it's also become a very important place, a very important ship. They had a press conference there not too long ago, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, they probably did. I was there in December when the Matthew Mamara came out of refit. The Israelis trashed the whole ship. They destroyed the engines. They destroyed everything on the bridge. Anything electronic was stolen or destroyed. Windows smashed out. You know, they took axes to doors to go through them. It was to cut holes in floors and walls. Who knows why, but they did. But she came back for refit, and I was there in December for the grand welcome home for the Matthew Mamara, and there was tens of thousands of people. I mean, they were saying, I didn't count them, but they announced that 10 to 20,000 people a day were touring through the ship from Istanbul. It was just a continuous swarm of people on all four decks walking through and looking at the the bloodied life jackets and clothing and the pictures of the attack, and everybody's crying.
Wow.
And men, women, children, just spontaneously crying as he went through. It was, and they recognized me. I guess my photo turned up in the media, not so much in Canada, but everywhere else in the world, my photo turned up as part of that film. And, you know, I held up that Israeli commando passenger list that I found in his backpack, and so on the street, even and certainly on the Magnum Amera, people were stopping me and getting my photo taken with them and shaking my hand. And
no, you've become a recognized figure in Turkey and internationally. Perhaps you could become a movie star. I know.
I don't know. Well, they did a film in Turkey about the Magnum Amera, a bit of a film. It wasn't a documentary. It was a sort of a James Bond kind of movie that they show. I'm going to see if I can get a copy of it when I go back there. my forte is direct action stuff. Obviously not talking on radio or giving personal presentations. I'm more of a hands on. Whether it's an election observer in El Salvador or a human shield in Guatemala or a human rights. And what I'm going to be on this ship, to get back to your question, on the Magnum Amera, I'll just be a human rights observer again. That's just what I did last time. I photographed, I probably won't get my photographs back this time. The Israelis, I'm sure, have me a red flag. But luckily I got my photographs out last time. And I just took photographs of the dead and wounded. I took photographs of all the three captured Israeli commandos. And I followed them down the stairs to make sure that they were well treated and weren't brutalized. And from what I could see, they were. I didn't accompany them all the time, but I followed them down so they had medical treatment on the lower deck, and then I went back up top to photograph more of the dead and wounded and the attack. But that's what I'll be doing again. I'll have my camera and my laptop computer, but it won't. I'm sure. If last time's any example, the Israelis jammed everything the second they came close, so any communications off the ship was limited the moment the Israelis turned up, and they seized every single camera chip and camera they could and destroyed them all. I got mine off because they left me to the very end, so they processed everybody else in the ship. I think they were trying to punish me. I gave them a bit of a hard time,
right?
You know, during the arrest. I sort of used my Canadian passport and my white privilege, not being racist, but it's true. I was able to get away with a lot more than the non-white people on board the ship, and the Israelis got quite infuriated with me. So they left me for 12 hours on the ship. Everybody else was processed. Everybody that was white and the journalist was processed within the first half hour, I understand, and I wasn't processed until there was only 12 people left on the ship. There were 600 people on that ship, and I stumbled off 12 hours later at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I think they were sick and tired of doing body cavity searches and stripping people, and they acted like a stupid tourist.
Well, there was what, like 600-700 people on that ship?
There was 600 on that ship. Once we were included, there was about 600 on our ship, and they processed them individually one at a time on the dock, photographs and searches, and almost sad file on everybody. I saw my file as being documented and put together. I actually saw it on the way out as well. A bit of a funny story to that. Some humor here. That when they're deporting me at the very end at Ben Gurion Airport, it was just a zoo because it was translators and all these people trying to deport us and process us. And the fellow came up to me for immigration. And he had my file and he says. He says, sign a deportation letter, the voluntary deportation letter, otherwise you won't get your passport back, voluntarily sign it.
Right.
And I said, well, you find my $4,000 that you stole off me on the ship. It's if you've got that and present it back to me in my wallet, so I'll sign your paper. And he rushed off to find my money and blah, blah, blah.
Did you get it back?
No, not a cent. I got my wallet back, but with some of my ID, but not my $4,000. I'm sure it's...
Well, there is.
While he was away, he left my Mossad file sitting in front of me inside of a clear plastic envelope, and there was an open water bottle next to it. So I took the water bottle and dumped the whole water bottle inside the envelope and sloshed it around, and handed it back to him. I was just so enraged by that point. I didn't care what they did to me. And they gave me a pretty good roughing up immediately after that, but they threw me onto the plane and got rid of me.
It's going to be harder to share those files with Stephen Harper now.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they're moldering away and growing mushrooms in some Mossad file cabinet in Tel Aviv.
Yes, well, you know, you say you're not so good on radio and whatnot, but you're very clear with us today, and you were very good on those presentations. And you mentioned Latin America and trips there and all the activities you've done. What's happened with the Mavi Marmara kind of reminds me historically or culturally what happened with the Granma in Cuba, in that it's become a very important ship now, a very important touchstone. Now, I guess we can't expect a whole lot of support from Harper's government right now. I don't know if they're gonna what they're gonna do when this thing is
support. I'm not discounting the possibility that I'll be on a no-fly list, that I won't even get out of Canada. To be honest with you, I'm waiting with bated breath on the 15th whether I get on my KLM flight in Vancouver or not.
Oh dear.
I mean, he said John Baird said that they would do anything they could to stop the Canadian boat going to Gaza, and I take him at his word, and I'm fully expecting that they might try this. I've certainly got my local MP and lawyers all lined up to fight the thing if they try to stop me, but we'll wait and see. It's there's no support from the Harper government. Take my word.
Okay. Well, you've made reference to the sabotage that occurred on the Challenger. Two, I think it was, and we heard from a member of that crew on this program about that. Yeah, it's a very serious thing, and if something like that happens again, or if you run into trouble, like I don't know how the current Canadian government is going to respond to that.
Oh well, they'll just ignore me, I'm sure. I don't know if you remember they did nothing for me when I after the Mavi. No blame to the embassy staff. They were very friendly and wanted to do whatever they could, but I think they got the word to do nothing, because all they did for me was they let me use a BlackBerry phone to phone Victoria to let people know that I was alive, and then they simply coordinated for a friend of mine to buy my ticket home, not all the way home. The Turks flew me to Toronto for free, thankfully, and then friends flew me from Toronto to Victoria. So there'll be no support. I'm sure if the Israelis get their hands on me again, it'll take a lot of Canadians screaming and yelling before Harper will even inquire about where I am.
Well, that's just the thing. You have the support of a lot of Canadian people, if not the government. I think you have to be brave to do what you're going to do in this environment.
The brave people are the Palestinians suffering this onslaught in Gaza. I mean, I was treated like a Palestinian for 3 days, and brutality, not being allowed to sleep, being threatened with gun to my head, beatings all around me, and I thought, well, my God, what would it be like if I was treated like this every day of my life? If this was a possibility of happening to me every day of my life, I can't imagine how the Palestinian people, their steadfastness. I think in Arabic it's samud, their steadfastness. It's just mind-blowing to me. And So it's the least I can do is to, with my white privilege and Canadian passport, the least I can do is try and get into Gaza again and bring some sort of small relief to them.
Well, we're part of those governments that support Israel, especially the Canadian government. So as Westerners, it's our duty, I think, to use what we have in order to bring attention, bring the spotlight onto this issue in our own governments, and so we can change policy. I spoke with the organizers of the Gaza Freedom Boat on the program several times, and they seem to believe, that we're closer to breaking this blockade than we were in the past. So, I mean, that's a good sign, and if this flotilla gets the coverage and attention it should cause people to think again, or once again, rethink what we've been told about Gaza. Certainly, the last flotilla was a major factor in that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're getting press coverage finally. The main media has ignored this amazing campaign. I mean, we raised over $300,000 just from, $10, $20 a person from right across the country, and some major donations from individuals, but mainly small donations. But they ignored us. They ignored us completely. We were just blacklisted from the main media. But now we're becoming a threat, and we've become effective. And now the National Post and the right-wing media is attacking us, which I think is a good sign that we're that much of a threat, we're that dangerous to the status quo, that they've decided to not ignore us.
I'll tell you what, Kevin, I don't know if you heard about this, but Glenn Beck was crying on TV, the Fox News conservative on the TV. He had heard that several bands had endorsed a Palestine Freedom single hit song or single song, and he said he was very upset. He said, "We have to get out there and raise awareness about what Israel needs, because there's this changing opinion about what's happening in Israel." So Glenn Beck was very upset about the tracks, the songs about freedom in Palestine and about the flotilla.
Good. But if he really looked into things, he'd realize that this flotilla is going to help Israel. I mean, they've had 60 years of the military option of trying to destroy the Palestinians through military means, and it's gotten them nowhere. I mean, it seems to be painfully obvious that this peaceful mode is the way to go. And the sooner these saber-rattling militarist extremists realize that, the safer Israel will be. And I see the end coming. I mean, South Africa is a perfect example. If you'd watched the National Post or the CBC just a few months before the collapse of apartheid, you would have thought it would never end. Whereas within months, suddenly Mandela was released. Next thing you know, he's president. But if you'd watched the main media, you wouldn't have seen it coming. So I think things are changing. The Arab Spring's happening. The border crossing with Egypt's going to be opened up, much more opened up soon. But, I mean, it seems comical now. I mean, right now we have the Abbas and the Fatah linking up with Hamas in a unity government. And Mr. Harper right now is funding the RCMP to train the police for the Palestinian Authority. So pretty soon, taxpayer dollars from Canada and Mr. Harper's support is going to be funding the training of police force for a combined Hamas and Fatah government. I mean, you know,
well, that's consistent with what we're seeing elsewhere. There's a lot of our tax dollars that are going to bombing of Libya, setting up of a network of military bases, as the government is currently proposing, maintaining the occupation in Afghanistan and so on. So what's a few dollars towards training police forces in Palestine?
That's right. And pretty soon they're going to be training a police force that's partly governed by the Hamas. So, you know, I don't know what Mr. Harper is going to do then.
Well, it's good to see that you can be part of lifting the siege and that Canadians can be part of lifting the siege. So I guess I'll direct people to the websites where people can go.
Sure. If they want to keep track of me, because I'm not going to be, I'm certainly linked up with the Canadian Boat to Gaza. I mean, I'm joined at the hip with them, but I won't be on the ship. If they want to follow my my situation on the flotilla, they can go to kevinneish.ca.
Kevin.
It's a blog site, and it'll have links to everything. And as I get information out, it'll be put up there immediately, and hopefully I'll get something out before the Israeli attack and let you know what's happening.
Right, that's Kevin, NEISH.ca. Very good.
Kevin Neish, NEISH.ca, and as long as nobody, you know, crashes it or hacks it, it'll be up there and reporting as I'm over there.
Well, thanks, Kevin. It's so great to have you back.
Well, thank you very much, Nick. Good talking to you again.
Thanks.
Hopefully I'll talk to you when I get back.
Absolutely.